live.
So I'll just make a comment or two here and then turn it over to Axel. One of the important functions of government is to assist their communities in the event of disasters. And it's been some time since we've had a discussion about emergency preparedness, and so we thought it appropriate to bring you up to speed. We've had a personnel change, and so you're going to meet somebody new this morning. So with that, Axel?
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Chair, council members. I think, and it's timely too. I don't want to steal any of Scott or Mike's thunder, but I think Sunday marks the 1 year for the Oso slide, and so I know there's a lot of things going on up there, and I know that's, you know, something huge that happened in our state that's fresh in our mind. Every spring we think about the eruption of Mount St. Helens, and so these things naturally or otherwise happen, and so it's just always a good idea to have a conversation about emergency preparedness and disaster response. As Mark mentioned, Scott Johnson is here. He's our emergency management division manager, if I said too many managers there. But he actually lives and is housed over in Cressa. Mike Lewis is here as our emergency response coordinator. He's housed right here in risk management. Both of them, I think, on the grand scale of things, are relatively new to the position. Scott took over for Cheryl, and Mike came. When did you come, Mike? Just 13, about a year. So just a good idea, I think, to introduce you again to both of them, let them tell you a little bit about what they do for us, both regionally and then, Mike, more internally with us on our campus situation, and just kind of go over the, we'll get into a lot of acronyms, but NIMS and ICS and what that stands for, what it means to us as and you as leadership for the county. So with that, I'll turn over, I think, Scott, or unless Mark wants to say something, but...
Use microphones, please. We record this and then we put it on the grid for people to hear. All those citizens that want to hang on your every word.
Thanks, as if I wasn't nervous enough. good morning, counselors. Thank you for having. Like Axel and Mark said, my name is Scott Johnson. I'm the Emergency Management Division Manager at Cressa. I am a retired Army Master Sergeant. I served for 22 years. I am also a former infantryman. And I have firsthand boots on the ground response for 2 global disasters, 4 federally declared disasters, and I retired as battalion operations sergeant. I spent 4.5 years working for Sikorsky Aviation Services, making ballistic protection systems for military helicopters, and I've been with Cressa for 2 years, my first year and a half as the regional training and exercise coordinator. I'm a FEMA certified master exercise practitioner, and I've been your emergency manager since last June. Part of the reason I'm here today is so that you can get to know me, so when you get that phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning, which I hope I never have to make.
You have my cell, I hope.
Yes, I do, sir. Okay. I have it.
All of it.
I do. I have you all on the bat phone, and I want you all to be able to put a face to that voice and to have confidence in both so that I can do my role in providing you with guidance in the sense that this is what we have going on. These are some of the options. I can help provide you with the situational awareness that you'll need to make good informed decisions as to what our disaster response protocols should be, to help you formulate disaster declaration protocols that could go either countywide, statewide, or possibly federal, and to help you get an overall sense of how that process works. So, as Axel said, the first step of that would be to hopefully over the next few months begin to introduce you to the National Incident Management System and the Incident Command System. It's what our responders use, it's what my organization uses, and it's what the people who come to help us are going to use. Yes, sir.
Scott, I wanted to thank you for that introduction, and I was looking for a break to be able to insert that in, so I'm sorry to interrupt you. Those list of experiences and qualifications that you just brought forward, I think whoever made that choice made a very smart choice. Just simply, that speaks of competence and experience and all of that, that says we got the right guy for the job.
Thank you, sir.
So very good to hear of all of that, and thanks for your service to our country.
Thank you, sir.
Now that I completely took you off base.
No, that's fine, sir. As I mentioned, I'm going to work, I'd like to work with you and with the rest of the senior staff to develop a series of informational courses that maximize your ability to understand what those systems, again, the National Incident Management System, Incident Command System, look like, because each of you and collectively have a key role in the National Incident Management System as our leadership here within our county, and tying that in both to the region, our Southwest Washington region, across the river, and statewide. So I think it's important to understand and identify those early so that we can avoid some of those initial, what do I do, what do I need to do? One of the things that my agency will be doing is we're working with the State Emergency Management Division to host an informational seminar on the potential Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake that we're doing that here on April 21st, and I hope you can all find time in your schedules to attend that. It's a very good presentation that was put together in conjunction with my staff and the Washington Military Department, the National Guard, that talks about what that's going to look like, some of the damage, some of the things that make living in Clark County better than some of the Pacific counties. So, again, I hope you all come and take away from that some questions and some things that you'd like to ask me to further develop those type of response protocols and questions.
And I assume there's some place that we know about where and when and what time, and that's posted somewhere.
Yes, sir. I'm going to send you that invitation again when we get done with this.
Okay.
Remember that date, that's your, when your property taxes are due.
Actually, the 30th, right?
So, when we get part of that, I'm sure one of the questions that you're going to come out of that, and I know it's one of the questions that Councillor Stewart has asked based on some participation she's had in the RDPO, is what does our disaster declaration process look like? What does that look like here in Clark County? So the first thing is we have an incident, and the incident commander, the senior law enforcement, fire, public works, the senior responder on site makes the decision and asks my office to declare an emergency. One of you or one of our other county leaders says, I think we need to declare an emergency because I think this is beyond our normal capacity to deal with this type of threat to our community. Or in my capacity, I will make the recommendation that we declare an emergency because this incident exceeds our normal capacity to respond to this. It doesn't have to be a catastrophe. It can be simply something that exceeds our normal capacity to respond to this. When that decision is made, I will ask that our regional crisis planning team, which is made up of our responding agencies, law enforcement, fire, public works, public health, public information, the senior staff, not necessarily the leadership, but the number two people within those agencies will convene at CRESA to begin to establish situational awareness and to formulate a strategic response plan. Our incident commanders, our first-line responders, are dealing with the situation as it unfolds and as it develops. They're doing the tactical plan. They're the boots on the ground, putting the wet stuff on the red stuff, dealing with the situation. The crisis planning team would be helping to look at that next day. What do we do an hour from now? What do we do the next day? And create a strategic plan and a series of recommendations that would then be funneled through my office in conjunction with Mike to the policy group, which are...
Yes, you just used the term. You said put the red stuff on the red stuff?
Red stuff. Oh,
can you translate that?
Wet stuff on the red stuff.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Water on the fire.
Oh, okay. So you have to translate some of that stuff from your world vernacular. Thank you.
So, and I do have a list of abbreviations I'm not going to use so that we can keep this to the allotted time. Once the crisis planning team has that, then we're going to begin to form the basic declaration. In the meantime, I would have asked the policy group, again, which is the commission, the senior leadership, the sheriff, a representative from the county fire districts, the prosecuting attorney, health officer, and any other key leadership that you feel needs to be part of this decision-making at the policy level. We would ask that you be convened either physically, or we are capable of doing this digitally, so you may be able to respond to this collectively through some type of, you know, cell phone or other type of crowdsourcing type of information. We would provide you with situational awareness and an understanding of the situation as it exists at that moment. In the meantime, my staff will begin using templates to formulate the draft declaration. The most common declaration is for a emergency funding or emergency spending authorization. Once that happens, we will route that through the prosecuting attorney's office. As I said, I'm a retired Army infantryman, and if I draft an emergency declaration, it'll look like it was drafted by a retired Army infantryman. So we will route that through the prosecuting attorney's
office. In other words, you'll get the job done. Get
yes,
it done.
Sir, it will get done.
Short words.
Short words. So we'll route that through the prosecuting attorney's office. They will put it in the proper format so that when we present it to you, you have confidence that it has been prepared from a sound basis on the emergency management and a sound basis in county code, state law, and federal law. So we know that it's a document that's going to do what we need it to do to address this emergency. We'll then ask the policy group to make a decision, and we'll provide recommended courses of action. Once that's done, the declaration is made. It then becomes part of the public record. We file it with the state. And depending on what we're trying to do, possibly an incident management team, possibly expanded purchasing, the crisis management team, the crisis planning team, or the incident management team would then put that declaration into effect. That is essentially how that process will work. And my hope is that with training and familiarity, it will take about as long to put into place as it did for me to describe it. So another common question that I get asked by senior leadership is, what is my role in an emergency? What is my role in a disaster? And like everybody else, the first thing is to make sure you're good. Make sure you're physically okay. When a disaster happens, if you're not good, if you're injured, you're not really capable, and none of us are, of responding fully. Then when you make sure your family's good, your family's okay, your neighborhood is okay, show up to where you need to be and help establish that situational awareness. And there'll be a lot of people that are wanting to provide you the information you need, and they're all working to do that and get that information to you in a concise, actionable format so that, again, you can help to make those decisions that that you need to make. So, and with that, I'm going to kind of turn it over to Mike, unless you have any questions.
I do have some questions.
Yes, sir.
Well, do you have any questions?
Just a statement.
Okay, go ahead.
So I've been fortunate enough to participate in several of the preparedness and the group settings, and I look forward to do that again. We rotate chairman here, and as chairman, I was privy to that. And it's really important that you get together and you see all those people in the same room. We did that down at the Air Academy building. And that was kind of a, you could actually see the players in there and the role that they played. And I'd encourage that more often to remind us what we're doing.
In a program put together by National League of Cities that was brought to this region about 4 years ago. And some of you all may have even been there. It was put together by National League of Cities, and it was for people like you, people in your position and next level up. And elected officials. There were only a few elected officials. That was a 3-day seminar. It was not a party dress seminar. It was a serious seminar. And it was very interesting. It was called Crisis Leadership, put together through Homeland Security. I saved some of the documents. I don't know if the information is all still the same. Things tend to change, but I'll bring that notebook and maybe you and I can sit down because it was for all levels of people. And it does kind of do a flow chart and a schematic, which, you know, would have to be specific to the organization. But it gives us an idea of structure.
Oh, I'd very much like to sit down and work that through you.
I don't exactly know what to call it, a special invitation, U.S. Military, Department of Navy, regarding transport of sensitive items through our area. So that was a full one-day seminar that was actually addressed. It was held locally. So it's an interesting process. It's very complex, but it's always good when you can see it's as effective as the people that are involved primarily and the structure that's set up secondarily. So I agree, we have the right man for the job.
Thank you.
And I've got some questions, too. I assume that money becomes backseat at that point. The priority has to do with solve the problem, save the lives, somehow handle the incident, and money is a consequence that just unfolds as a result of that. If we if the declaration of emergency is issued, I imagine, and I'm guessing here, that there are two basic source of funds. One is the local general fund here that says, well, that resulted in a significant amount of expenditure for that we're going to have to somehow make up. Versus some provision that's either at the state level or at the federal level for funds that are set aside for declarations of emergency that don't need to be paid back, and maybe some of those do, some of those don't. So I'm curious about the financial consequence of a major incident in our community. What about the aftermath when it comes to finances? What do we know about the kinds of things that are prepared for it and that would keep us out of trouble after the fact?
Actually, I've asked the county finance department to assist in staffing the emergency operations center, and I've told them that the first two people that I want to see come in the door are people from county finance. And you're right, sir. The first priority is life safety, and the second one is incident stabilization, and the third is the long-term recovery and environmental impact. Our responders are going to deal with the first one. We're going to deal with the second one. And that third one needs to happen in parallel rather than in series. And to that end, getting the finance people in early to identify what the proper funding source is, be it the county general fund, some funding sources that we have internally, or state or federal, is important. When the SR 530, the OSO slide, happened, when it was all over, Snohomish County submitted something on the order of $4 million in reimbursement, and as of late last year, they had received approximately $40,000 in actual reimbursement. A lot of that was because they didn't track expenses. And I don't mean to seem critical to them. That's a horrendous thing to respond to. And they've admitted that their way of tracking expenses really wasn't as robust as they had hoped it was. And so some of these exercises that you've participated in and some that I hope to schedule with you in the future will address some of those. As far as what funding sources, yes, sir, as you mentioned, we do have a general fund that may do. We have some mutual aid agreements that we would activate that would take care of some of those. We participate in a Southwest Washington Regional Incident Management Team, which is a dedicated team of responding professionals that can come in specifically to manage some of those. And once we have that declaration on file with the State Emergency Management Department will begin helping us to track our expenditures so that we can begin to look at when we reach some of those thresholds for Federal Stafford Act declarations, other declarations depending on is it a weather emergency, is it a flooding emergency, and there are some other federal agencies that have response funding mechanisms. The recovery piece is, and I don't mean this to dodge the question, the recovery piece can be very complex. And so those funding sources are also tied to how well we identified our expenses in the response.
And, Councillor, oh, I can see you're getting ready to ask a question. A lot of this is in tandem also with our insurance companies. FEMA wants our insurance companies involved immediately. Usually there would be a catastrophic declaration in the insurance world. and they would be at our hip, making sure that they can advance this money also in some of those types of claims. And sometimes, like in the OSO incident, if you don't involve that team, the finance folks with the insurance folks, the claims adjusters, and the state and federal government, it may not warrant getting reimbursed. So, in a case like in 2006 when we had the big I think it was six, wasn't it, the big water?
That
was flood. Oh, we had the flooding in
96, but then 06 was a tough year too. But 96 was a big one.
So we. I was trying to think, we had the flood here, but when we declared here, we had adjusters involved also from our insurance company. So we would make sure that, that the worst case scenario is all we would end up with, hopefully, would be just our deductible. So.
Exactly what you're talking about, and the failure of, was that Snohomish County?
Most recently, but that's actually been something that has been systemic in many major disasters throughout the nation.
It has, and one of the ways to mitigate that is at the moment of the declaration to have everybody who takes any action at all, every department, every function, every role, start documenting what they're doing so that the clock starts running on the cost. And that documentation is what will support you when you go to the feds and say, hey, help here. And so it's important from the earliest inception of an action that everybody who's doing anything documented.
Ma'am, then that is a key point, and that's one of the challenges when these catastrophic things occur is getting that administrative, getting the things documented, and that's why, and the finance section within the county has been very supportive. We have four finance team members assigned to the EOC. They're getting some of that incident command system training, that NIMS training, and becoming familiar with many of those federal response guidelines and some of the identification points so that when they come in the door very early on, possibly even before the formal declaration because the EOC has been stood up, we're getting that documentation trail rolling very early.
I assume that there's a big, I picture this big light switch, and that light switch has two positions. It has local, that says, this is not a declaration of emergency, we'll handle this with our own resources and with our own local funds. And I, and on the, in the other position is the declaration of emergency position, where we tap external resources to invite them, to welcome them, to even have a much larger role. The significance of that, the discretion that says, where do we, how do we make that call? I assume they both have, I mean, there's good and bad consequences for both of those positions. If we get that wrong and say, you know, we think we can handle this internally, I assume that we're also signing up for covering all of the costs locally, that we're not going to somehow turn in some receipts to somebody else and they're going to end up paying for it. And if versus financially, if we flip that switch to need help, then I assume that we open the door for external finances to tap those resources that are set aside at the state and the federal level to bail us. I don't want to say bail us. Maybe that is the right term. Bail us out. Help us to cover those extraordinary costs.
It is an interactive process, and it's you're not going to be judged. The three of you won't be judged on they missed this or they were too late or they were too early. It's really an interactive process, and it matures and goes along. And Scott would be involved and Mike would be involved all along as it develops, and maybe our sheriff's office says, we're out of staff. We can't support this any further, and that's when we would start to head that path.
And I've got great confidence in all of the emergency management staff, law enforcement, all of those first responders, that that you guys will get the job done. Our role here, I want to make sure we get our part right so that it's all settled, it's all done, everybody goes home, and we're left with the tab. And anything we can do to ensure that we don't end up with a subsequent financial disaster to pay for what was so wonderfully handled to get the job done. That's the part that I think we need to concern ourselves with. So, Mr. Manager, if there's anything we can do to ensure that we've set things in place. We have a way to be able to properly track all the expenses to know what the sources are, what the standards are to comply with in order to get reimbursement for those things. That would be that's our challenge, because at this point I'm not aware of anything. Well, sounds like we need to be.
Yes, sir. And that's one of the things that we've taken that initial first step, as Councillor Stewart said, by having those people in the finance section when I activate the EOC, which could be prior to an actual declaration. From the moment an incident commander calls me and says, I want to activate the Emergency Operations Center, this is a little bit more than I can handle, we're going to begin tracking all those expenses. And if they never exceed what we're capable of, what we've budgeted for, we've still tracked them. We have that mechanism in place to begin tracking them. And we have participation in several mutual aid organizations, both the Pacific Northwest Mutual Aid, Washington State Mutual Aid, and those are the type of things that help to mitigate those costs, because we have pledged not only responder support, but emergency staff support, other types of support to fellow jurisdictions throughout the region on a we will be there for you and you will be here for us. And that's one of the biggest strengths that we have, both in the state and our region, to do some of that cost mitigation.
So it sounds like an important part of the emergency preparedness that's already in place is the emergency financial preparedness. And those processes, at this point, it sounds like it's covered. There's not some kind of work that needs to be done there in order to patch some holes and make sure that we're well prepared. It sounds like it's already, we're there.
Councillor, in order to track costs for a particular project or purpose, our accounting system has a 6-digit code at the end of the code string. Immediately, Mark Gassaway would ensure this would occur, but we would create they're called reporting categories. We would come up with a unique 6-digit number, and anything that's purchased in any hour or fraction of an hour that's spent in support of this response would be charged to that 6-digit code, and we can print reports out substantiating every dollar we spend.
Great. Thank you.
Very well, and that flood, Sandy Hall and our Public Works folks did a great job of recovery. Like the Buncombe Hollow slide and some other things like that.
In addition, once the finance folks that we have coming over from the county have integrated the tracking system that Mr. McCauley mentioned into our internal system, there's FEMA training available on how to get that information FEMA-ized so that when we make those submissions. So we have the basic system in place, but like all of our preparedness and planning, we're always looking to make it better, and we're always looking to make it more robust. Some of the efforts that we're taking in that is something that we call equipment classification. One of the key components of the reimbursement piece is when a local construction company donates a bulldozer, I need to know what type of bulldozer, what condition it was in, and what it was donated for, so that when we reimburse our community partners and our volunteers for their time and effort and equipment, we're identifying accurately what they donated. So that's an example of some of the steps that we're in the process of taking.
If you were to donate, I assume that some of the resources they could loan, somebody has a bulldozer and they see it, have at it.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Team.
And those are some of the things that we want to track so that if that bulldozer gets damaged, we're able to reimburse our community partners and, keep that type of spirit.
All right. That'll keep me looking away. All right. Sorry.
You have two, Mike.
Not my forte. Chairman, Councilors, Mike Lewis from the county, obviously. I, too, served in the military. I retired after 30 years in the United States Coast Guard a year ago. I spent 20 years enlisted and 10 years as a chief warrant officer. One of the great things about the Coast Guard, a lot of different things that you can do. I did a lot of search and rescue, maritime law enforcement. Also was on an anti-terrorism team for 4 years, deployed all over the United States, primarily in a couple places like Guam and stuff like that. I was a military policeman for 3 years. And then the basics, you know, operations, leadership, planning, training and instruction. Throughout my career, I responded to multiple emergencies at both the operations and the supervisory and command level. I spent 9 years in command, including the CO of Station Coos Bay and over 14 years as a department head. And finally, I've spent all but two years of my life in the Pacific Northwest in Alaska. So that's kind of my background.
That's great. We are in, so the team is, this is the A team we got here. It's, we are in very good hands. And thanks again for that time in serving our country.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. So some of the stuff that Scott talked to you about, I'm going to talk about from the internal perspective. So I'm kind of my primary job is the internal emergency response for the county, focusing inside. Scott and I always like to joke, if the county's on fire, it's Scott's problem. If one of our buildings is on fire, it's my problem. So to kind of give you a little perspective of what we're talking about. My primary duties encompass basically preparedness and our internal emergency response, preparedness for our employees, for the different departments, offices, basically our county government. In that, I'm providing information, training, and also my experience and direction in preparing for and responding to emergencies and incidents, and also disasters. The emergency response part of it, one of the big jobs that I have is taking a look at our policies, procedures, and the processes that we use. Things like as simple as our building emergency guide for employees and that kind of stuff. Reviewing what we have and updating and improving, and with newer information and those kind of things. Identifying any kind of gaps that we might have in our training or in our policies and procedures. And also developing new stuff. So one of the things that I'm working on right now is an internal organization for responding to internal emergencies to basically improve our current emergency response organization. It's based on ICS so that it will integrate fairly easily with the stuff that Scott will have going on and just basically kind of to get us all in that ICS mode, get familiar with it, and gives us an opportunity to practice it. Obviously, again, conducting training and education with it, providing resources to our various levels of that organization. Currently, right now, we have the lower portions of the organization was already established before I got here. So, like in the building emergency guide, we have the base level is the employees. Above that would be the safety coordinators from the various safety committees, and then it identified facility emergency coordinators, like one primary for the public service center here. What I've done is defined those roles a little bit farther and expanded out their duties and responsibilities, provided them checklists to use during emergencies and stuff, and then started building an organization based on ICS above that, all the way up through all the electeds and that stuff. So, the example for why I believe that we need to start doing this is obviously the entire nation's going to ICS, some people quickly, some people not. But a good example would be like the CCH, the shooting over at the Center for Community Health that happened about a month before I got here. Unfortunate incident, that kind of stuff. But ultimately, when I looked at it, and we looked at it, in some ways, as an organization, we got kind of lucky during that as far as it was a single incident and it didn't, expand out throughout the building. Had it done that, we could have been facing losing that building for multiple days or at least the top couple of floors or wherever that was due to the law enforcement investigation. And we have great people at the county, great, leaders. We've could have figured it out. What I'm trying to set up is an organization where if we are having to figure out where are we going to put our employees, what are we going to do with this, what are our priorities and stuff, we already have that organization in place. And, Councilor, like you said, flip the switch, and here we go. So it's a big thing that I'm working on right now.
Great.
The other thing in conjunction with that, is improving our incident communications. This also originally came out of the CCH shooting, but our employee notification, emergency notification system, people call it differently. I've been working closely with the sheriff's office on improvements to the system and also on our processes for using it, et cetera, and work really well with them. Also looking at exploring alternate methods and backups to improve our redundancy for our incident communications. I think everybody can kind of remember, like, when we had the server room flood and lost computers for an afternoon, some of the havoc that that caused. I'm working on some stuff to help us at least communicate to employees and that, and working with Scott and his folks over at Cresso, we're moving towards having a good backup for our ENS. If we lose computers, it's basically a system that they use that everybody remembers as reverse 911 for the county itself. So, and some other improvements with that. And then eventually down the road coming up with a basic emergency communications plan. Again, when I say emergency, I'm talking about something internal, a building fire, a flood, something like that that affects just us. If it gets outside of us or gets something really, really big, then we start, you know, working over towards Scott's world. So one of the big things that I do is a lot of training and drills, working really closely with the team in risk management, health and safety, and the safety coordinators. And it's basically improving, the knowledge of our procedures, the awareness, and those kind of things of our employees on how to respond, prepare for, and respond to emergencies internal. Of develop and conduct and evaluate emergency response training and drills for our county employees, like the annual fire drill. We were able to conduct another evacuation using the shakeout, great shakeout, and also one of the first trainings, and took a lot of my time initially when I first got here. Again, the CCH shooting had happened a month before I got here. We got a lot of information out of that, the safety committees and stuff. So in conjunction with the sheriff's office, I developed an active shooter awareness and preparedness course for our employees. We did a lot of training throughout all the departments, and now it's actually included in our new hire, small portion of it, and I'm offering that like every 6 months to catch anybody who wasn't able to attend. So basically the big part with the training and drills is just working on people participating and practicing. I mean, one of the things that we've all learned before, especially, you know, in the military, those things, that's how you prepare for things, is get exposed to it ahead of time by practice and training. And then when things happen and the stress hits, hopefully they'll go back to the training that we provided for them. Obviously, the other things, liaison, a lot of work with the folks at Cresso, the sheriff's office, and all of our other partners in the area. So those are the main things that I work on. Yep.
Good.
Great.
Any questions?
I do. After that incident, we went over and visited the health building over there, and they were talking about a couple of things, woulda, shoulda, you know. And one of the things they talked about was the safety rooms. Plan to exit, and then also a lockdown strategy. Have they been working on that?
Yes, Counselor. I mentioned the stuff with the ENS that came out of there and the training that came out of there. The other thing was a lot of the security concerns and those kind of things. And again, working with the Sheriff's Department, we took a look at a lot of those things. One of the things that I'm doing, some of the projects I kind of listed down here, and is that even countywide, talking more about, getting people out of buildings, working on our evacuation safe routes, our lockdown areas, and our shelter-in-place areas. And we've done some stuff over there, trying to think of specifics, just to change a few of the locations.
Yeah, some of the, just to add to that, some of the glass where they wanted to hide was clear, and right now it's frosted. Mm-hmm. We put reverse locks on so that they could, without a key, lock from the inside. So many things like that. That after action right review list we took, got together with facilities and had a lot of that done.
Yeah, and some of the strategies wouldn't work. So you wouldn't necessarily just exit everybody because you're going to lose the person you're looking for. So there's a rule for different incidents that happen. So I just wanted to...
Right. Right, and that was one of the things, was having to do some education with employees, because we all have our perceptions of how to respond to an active shooter or something like that. But one of the first basic things that we teach people is active shooter situations are fluid and they change rapidly, and you can train on how to respond to them. But you have to have alternatives because, you know, just a quick example. If you're in a certain office and something starts there and you always view that it's coming in the front door and you always train like that, then if it comes from the back door, it can throw people off. So we try to keep it real, real big with that. And also, trying to think of the non-military term, just educating people, you know, I'll use the military term. Just calibrating some of our folks' expectations on things like the ENS. Them understanding that an incident happens, the gunshots go off, you're not going to receive an ENS in the first 60 seconds or a minute or so saying, do this. It's unrealistic to have that expectation. So you have to know your initial responses to, and this goes for, we're using the shooting, but to a fire, to, you name the emergency in one of our facilities, you need to know the response or where to get that information. One that we teach them all the time, know where you're building emergency guide is, know where to grab it, flip to the page, there you go. So again, that's just a short part of it. The other thing and is coming out of there is the law enforcement safes, law enforcement lock boxes. We identified basically that you know, fire departments have access to our buildings through the Knox boxes. Knox box wouldn't work for law enforcement for the stuff that we wanted to get for them. So we just completed installing three different safes in three of our facilities, or a safe in three of our facilities that have law enforcement stuff in there and building access, basically floor plans and a few things like that, and some keys and access. We tested it during the recent SWAT training that we had here in the building after hours, and it worked out really well. So we're working to get, for those type of incidents, working to get law enforcement familiar with our facilities and give them the tools and the access that they need to take care of business. So, great.
Great. Following up on that same question, it sounds like the community health building was focused on and prepared and proactively improved to handle that. The question is, on the other facilities that we have we gone through that exercise there as well?
We've done the training with them, the initial training. I've also offered up to do active shooter drills and those kind of things. We haven't actually done them. We were working towards doing it with the sheriff's office, but we weren't able to get that done this fall. So let's do some challenges on the timing. Basically, where we're at, the sheriff's office needs to do their training after 5 p.m. in the evenings. And so I've offered up to a few different of our offices to at least do walkthroughs, which is, again, is what the basics for our training is, trying to educate everybody. We can't just go right straight to an active shooter drill. We need to walk through an active shooter drill and then build it up to actually doing a full-scale drill. And honestly, the biggest challenge that I have is finding time. And we all know the county. I mean, I'm here for a year, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know about the county. But the bottom line is everybody's busy. They've got a lot of things going. And, you know, our participation in things like the shakeout was excellent, but there were some different departments that were unable to because of it was tax season or because of those things. And that's honestly my biggest challenge, is trying to figure out times when do you take the auditor's office and the joint lobby on the second floor and do a active shooter drill. And we'll figure that out. At least we're getting them the education and yeah.
Thank you for that, and I'm with you. We're all busy trying to make things more better. And the the full-on max out, we have a big coordinated drill, and all of that is probably the end of the, you know, the maximum you could do. But the incremental steps that potentially we could take, smaller, more manageable, one of those I imagine, and I'm guessing here because it's your area, not mine, is that just simply a walkthrough from somebody who has an eye for that kind of thing to be able to say, you know what, if we do this and this and this, those several changes in the building, in the facility, then we'll be, it'll be more intuitive. People will be able to, where are they going to run, what are they going to do, and we can prepare that just simply as a manageable step.
Thanks, Counselor. We've actually done that. We've offered that up, and I didn't cover that portion of it. But myself and Sergeant Schoening at the time, who was the sergeant or the campus deputy, have done walkthroughs of any of the offices down here and anybody else. I've been up to Brush Prairie, those places. Any time a supervisor calls, we've done that walkthrough. And that's where some of the switching locks, you know, we're going to lock down in this room, but we can't lock it from the inside. Hey, you need to switch these locks and that kind of stuff. We've done
The elections office and the public works office and those facilities. You've already got that.
Anybody who asked, we did. We've done the joint lobby. I can PA child support. Quite a few places.
Okay. 2 years ago, we did courthouse even while they were in session, and it worked extremely well.
Great. Great, thank you. Microphone.
I want to thank Axel and Mark for bringing this back up to the forefront. These two gentlemen here, as you can tell, are not for lack of words, and so they will constantly be on us, and that we will respond and make sure that our services continue in the county uninterrupted.
Like about these gentlemen is that every word is countable. So, but I'd like to go back and remind us. I don't think we're that far away in the future of designing a new service building for our shops of consideration. And when we get ready to do such a thing, that in the design of the facility, we need to incorporate some sort of consideration.
That'd be great. I would really appreciate that.
So a comment that I want to make to you, I want to circle back around to the prior experience I had. And let me be clear. I wasn't bringing you the notebook because I think you need training. Because part of it is for elected officials, I thought maybe we can look at that, make copies of anything that remains current, and share that with the fellow elected. So I don't want any misunderstanding about
I didn't think that's what you meant. In fact, I think it would be very valuable, and I'd like your input on what parts of that presentation you found the most valuable, so that, yes, as an elected official and as a decision maker and a policy maker, so that when I help to craft some of the training that I'm going to present to you, I'm giving you value-added training and not just pontificating and filling because.
I appreciate the intuition where you understood that.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Very good.
Thank you guys very much.
Each of your words counted. You guys are a wealth of information. I'm very thankful that you're able to tune in, that you're qualified for those roles, well qualified. We feel like we're in really good hands. And, Mark, thank you very much for pulling this together and helping us to know that we're in good hands.
Welcome. More to come as we move ahead.
Okay. Thank you.